America, and to all of our listeners all around the globe, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Analfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Lennon was once quoted as saying, there are decades when nothing happens, and then there are weeks when decades happen.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty apt.
That fucking happened this week because on Monday, September 23rd, 2019, President Donald John J. Trump, 45th president of the United States, became the third president in American history to have an official impeachment inquiries be opened against him.
Yeah.
And what really impressed people is how fucking fast it happened. So, like, we'll talk a little bit more about it. But basically, the thing that finally was, I guess, the straw that broke the camel's back, we first heard about that. That first became, like, a major thing we knew late last week. And it only took about 2 days before everything started crashing down.
Yep.
I mean, we suddenly went from, oh, there's this thing, and then now we got a whistleblower, and then the State Department is like, holy shit, this is serious, and then suddenly we're talking about getting the memorandum released, and then the memorandum comes out, and even though it's more of a summary of the transcript than the transcript itself, it basically does nothing to hide or even attempt to hide or cover up what happened. And then suddenly Speaker Pelosi comes out and, well, we'll get to that later. But, yeah, it's just the whole thing happened so quickly in just a few days' time.
Yeah.
It was
government
pretty.
Can't move quickly.
Yeah. I mean, if you blink, you miss a bunch.
Yeah. So I'm going to save that until a little later because, holy shit, there is a lot to go through. Like I said, so much happens so quickly. Part of me wants to think that maybe this is shit that they already kind of had in place to get going if the Russian stuff panned out. Like, so many just waiting for something like this to come out. I was like, all right, fuck it. Here it is. Hit the switch. This is what we've been training for. Anyway, before we get to all of that, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
As some of you might know, like, one of the things I do to keep busy is I run a bunch of servers and websites for some people. This week, get an email from the Bulletin saying, hey, we've just released an emergency patch because there's a really severe security vulnerability in the Bulletin 5. So, okay, yeah, this is kind of bad. I'll go apply that update now. But before I even gotten the update, that server had been hacked.
Oh, Jesus. My God.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, basically, I had, they spent basically that whole Wednesday cleaning up after this. The only, like, good part is that whoever tried to exploit this particular site was kind of an inept idiot and managed to lock themselves out before they could do any damage. So that was great. they managed to drop a payload for VBulletin 4, which basically broke the back end, so that they couldn't get access to it either. So it was basically a matter of me going in and re-uploading the files, re-enabling the admin interface, getting all that stuff sorted out, and updating to the latest version so that it didn't happen again. But it's one of those things. It's like, wow, I'm really glad this site did not get exploited by somebody who actually knew what the fuck they were doing. Or I probably would have never even noticed that it had happened. Because yeah, the symptoms was basically a change to one particular file, which it was added one line that would basically give somebody remote code execution if they sent a request with a particular password. So I made sure that wasn't there. So yeah. Cleaned up all that, cleaned up all the index files that had been corrupted, and then for good measure, I went ahead and changed all the server passwords, because you never know with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, that was exciting. And,
Wow.
It's also funny, because, like, that payload that they dropped on the server had, like, exploits for, like, WordPress and, like, a whole bunch of stuff that didn't even exist on the server. So... Yeah, it was one of those, like,
A fire and forget operation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the problem is like, all these different exploit payloads were just basically conflicting with each other, so nothing got done. Yeah. So, apart from, like I said, locking themselves out. So, that was exciting. And apart from that, well, I've been doing a lot of listening to Alter Bridge's catalog, because they got a new album coming out on the 18th of October. I'm really looking forward to that. I like this band. They are some of the most talented musicians out there right now, I think. And it's kind of amazing, because they used to be Creed, and now they're not. Well, sometimes they are, when they, for some reason, let Scott Stapp back in.
Yeah, they're humoring him.
Yeah. But most of the time, they're not. And they're great. So that's kind of what I've been doing there. And apart from that, well, just been playing a whole lot of PC Building Simulator and not much else. That's it for me.
All right, Pat?
Yeah, I've mainly been reading the X-Men relaunch, which is now 10 books in out of 12. And I'm not going to get into too much spoilery stuff here, but we're definitely going to have to unpack the whole thing once it's over. Because, oh my God, Jonathan Hickman is onto something. And I'm probably at least going to start out buying all six of the ongoing books for at least a little while, as long as they hold my interest.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the best X-Men stuff since I was a teenager, honestly. So there's probably not going to be a better jumping on point for the next 5 years. So I'll save all of the analysis stuff for when more of us have been through it, but... Oh my God, get on now if you haven't already, because this is some groundbreaking shit.
Well, Hickman, as far as like comics writers go, you know, you've often heard the phrase used as like somebody writing for the trade, or like, you know, because they're like, you know, they're writing the arc specifically with the trade paperback in mind.
Yeah, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, Hickman writes for the omnibus.
Yeah.
He writes for, like, it ain't just the regular, like, 140-page trade paperbacks. No, he's writing for that 400-page omnibus that costs, like, $50.
Yep.
But, yeah. So, Teresa, what about you?
I have been playing, when my wrists allow me, Link's Awakening, and when I can get the Switch away from my kid, who is currently playing Link's Awakening. Which is, we've talked about it. Like, I'm sure you guys talked about it Sunday. It's beautiful. It really is. I'm really glad that they did this. I hope that they do this with a few more older games. It's really cool. Even if he does look like a Rankin Bass character. So
yeah, he does.
Yeah.
So obviously those who know, Link's Awakening was originally a Game Boy game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was originally supposed to be like a Game Boy port for Link to the Past, which is why it looks so similar graphically. But of course, it's the Game Boy, and, well, that was the Super Nintendo. So
Yeah.
What they ended up doing was they just said, you know what, fuck it. Let's just take these assets and do something insane with them. Which is why that game, compared to all the other major Zelda games, is such an outlier.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, you got the chain chomp and stuff. It's kind of like, what?
But chain chomp, there's a whole, like, 2D platforming section with Goombas.
Yeah.
Both Mario and Luigi show up in there. There's a Yoshi doll. There's a lot of shit like that in that game. But anyway.
Yeah.
The point is, a lot of, like, the other handheld games that came out later for, like, the Game Boy Advance, unfortunately, I'm not sure if that's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Because, unfortunately, the company that made those games aren't around anymore. So, yeah. But, yeah, anyway, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. I've also been listening to a lot of Stuff You Should Know, which is an educational, I suppose, podcast. Yeah. I turned it on last night, and Scott said they have the most unappealing voices anywhere. He compared them to when Saturday Night Live tries to rip on NPR, and I'm like, I like what they're doing. It's so weird how...
You should give him a link to Behind the Bastards. That's the podcast I listen to quite frequently. The most recent one they've been doing is on Richard Steiner.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know who he is, he was the guy who came up with the concept of Waldorf schools.
No, it's Rudolf Steiner. Steiner. We actually went to a Waldorf school for a while.
Yeah, that dude, let's just put it this way. He was a German gentleman who talked an awful lot about the Jews.
Uh-huh, he was racist AF.
He's also the guy who invented organic farming.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we could probably do an entire podcast on Waldorf, but other people apparently are doing it. So, yeah. Yeah, I think Scott would especially like listening to the Rudolf Steiner one, because he did not particularly care for a lot of things about Waldorf, nor did I. A lot of woo. So much fucking woo.
Yep.
Something about all those gnomes and crystals and shit.
You know, that's fine, but when they start going on about, well, you can't let your kid not wear a hat outside in the winter before they turn 7 because their soul will start escaping out of the top of their head, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm not buying your essential oils.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm sure these guys are probably in the same vein. The Stuff You Should Know people, they are like, they're absolutely for skeptics. Mm-hmm. they cover some really interesting stuff. So I've been listening to that, and what else have I been doing? Oh yeah. I've been earbud testing, which mm-hmm. has been fun. And I have some, Sennheiser ones that I just got tonight, and I think that I like those a lot, and now I need a phone that has a phone jack again. So, or a headphone jack. Because, you know, why do they keep doing this shit to us? We don't want dongle life.
No.
Yet, here we are.
Apple had to have their courage.
And then Google had to jump on the bandwagon with them.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that Samsung, at least, is jumping off of it for some of them. Like, the S10 has a headphone jack, but the Note 10 does not.
Yeah.
So,
what? I don't think the S11 is going to have a headphone jack either. I think that ship sailed.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because, I mean, headphones and speakers have been working quite well for, what, 100, 150 years now?
Yeah, that's a very well-proven little connector.
So, but yeah, I sometimes you have to not overly high-tech yourself. And you guys already heard me go on about AirPods. What the hell were those expensive things that I had that I returned to Costco?
I think they were those Apple AirPods.
Oh, God. Ugh. So, yeah, they sounded all right, though, but insanely uncomfortable, very short battery life. And who wants to sneeze and drop something out of your back pocket that cost you like $150 and never get them back?
People with six-figure incomes, I guess.
I guess. Unfortunately, I think that it's probably the people who want to look like they have a six-figure income, but are really living paycheck to paycheck, like, you know, 99.9% of the rest of us.
Hmm. Or our current president.
Yeah, who I keep saying is cash poor.
All right.
Anyway, that's all for me. Who's up next?
Chris?
So I've been watching some stuff that is related to the Beatles. Mm-hmm. I watched the Giant Bomb Today thing on 9/8, September 8th. That was them playing all the songs in the Beatles Rock Band.
Mm-hmm.
Doing a marathon of that with a bunch of former Harmonix people, which was pretty fun, especially when they were playing through it and kind of realizing there's a lot of fucked up music in here. Songs that are kind of rapey, murdery, creepy about them talking about wanting teenage girls.
That was the early 60s.
That kind of stuff was written by rock bands through the 80s.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Way longer than it should have been, but yeah, that stuff. There's like one good bit where John Drake is just like, between singing bits, he's like, oh, that's not how that works. It's not that sort of stuff, just sub-commenting on the lyrics. Yeah, there's lots of weird stuff that the Beatles did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's putting it mildly.
Yeah. But yeah, they played all the songs that are on the disc, as well as the DLC stuff. Did a pretty good job for most of the time. One of the cool things they did is one of the former devs brought his kids with him. Mm-hmm. I think the girl is 10 years old. She was one of the developer babies.
Yep.
And she very much did not want to be there. She was very much had the look of like, Dad, why are you bringing me to your work thing? Kind of looked at her when they were kind of asking her to talk a bit about somehow coming into the existence while they're making this game, kind of thing. But the other thing I did is I watched Across the Universe on Netflix, which is a musical using a lot of the Beatles songs.
And it's got Rufus Wainwright doing Across the Universe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a weird ass movie. Lots of like ham-fisted story bits, because like the main character is named Jude. He lives in England, goes across the country to the U.S., meets Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
The girl he gets interested in is Lucy. I think one of their roommates ends up being Prudence.
Mm-hmm.
Their landlord is in a band that gets a new guitarist named Jojo. You know, all the good stuff there. Mm-hmm. And it's set around the Vietnam War. Lucy's boyfriend goes off to fight in Vietnam and is killed. That sort of thing. So that's how her and Jude kind of get together in the wake of that. And there's a whole period that's like the drug sequences where Bono plays an artist that such as sings I Am the Walrus.
Mm-hmm.
And leads the crew on his magical drug bus out to the middle of nowhere to this drug farm, drug circus thing. It's like all the weird shit happens. And a bunch of those kind of era of Beatles songs are sung. Like the music itself is pretty good. The story, now that just kind of is okay. It's merely a vessel for them to insert Beatles music into it, which I guess works on that premise, mm-hmm. but it's not really entertaining outside of that. But yeah, like it was really weird when Bono shows up and I'm like, he's got like a, you know, like a walrus mustache on and all that. It's like, is that fucking Bono? Because it sounds like him. And he sings, you know, all that sort of stuff there. And I had to look it up. It's like, yep, that's Bono, all right.
Yeah.
It's like, of course they would find some way for him to get in here. But yeah, that was all right. I also watched Ralph Breaks the Internet on there. I was trying to watch some of the Disney stuff before it goes away. That one's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it's a sequel to the first movie where they've kind of Ralph and the girl from the Sugar Rush game is kind of still hanging out together, but kind of getting to like a stagnation of just her playing the same racing game that has no real new stuff for her. And so they find out what gets plugged into their overloaded surge protector is a Wi-Fi router.
Yep.
It gives them access to the internet. And along the way, like her, the girl's machine gets the steering wheel gets broken off. So they're going to shut down her machine. And sort of they'll end up being like homeless essentially with no game to play. And so Ralph and her go out to the internet to try to get the steering wheel off of eBay. And because they don't know how auctioning works, they end up raising the price from like maybe $1,000 to $27,000 because they're just yelling larger numbers. That's what they think they're doing. It's just yell a larger number, that sort of thing. And they have to pay for it. I got like 24 hours or whatever to pay for it. And ends up going to BuzzTube to make a bunch of viral videos, which is, you know, Ralph doing the hot pepper challenge and all this sort of stuff. A bunch of weird stuff that is pretty well done. And, yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff in there. There's a whole bit with the Disney princesses. And, of course, they inject them into the finale.
Yep.
Of like, oh, Disney saves the day, everybody. Isn't that just lovely sort of thing. But, yeah, it's pretty all right.
Something about that image of Cinderella breaking her glass slipper like she's about to cut a bitch.
Yeah.
It's just so funny.
Yeah, when she gets there and she like teaches them the notion that they don't have to wear dresses all the time.
Yeah.
Like they can just have like normal clothing. It's like a funny bit there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they are talking about like the annoying like tropes they're forced into, like, oh, they gotta wait for a strong man to save you.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, all that, which they get to make fun of at the end. It's like, oh, there's a strong man that needs saving. Talking about Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. So yeah, that's there's some fun bits there. I need to watch a few more things that are on there. I think Coco's on there, a couple more that Pixar and Disney stuff that I need to watch. But yeah, I did some streaming this week. I played The Sojourn, which came out last Friday. It's very much a first-person puzzle game in a vein of like a Portal. But instead of like having a gun to as your like main way of interacting with puzzles, you're kind of just you have these well, it changes a little bit at times, but and early on you have like this spot that you have to like fill the darkness in you that shows like an alternate version of the puzzle area you're looking at. So I'll be like, oh, there's a gap here regularly, but when you go fill up your darkness meter, it shows a platform that lets you get across, sort of thing. So you have to figure out how to use that stuff, as well as like there's statues, there's harps that rebuild some of the platforms. There's other things that you get along the way that you kind of figure out how to use them together to get across these challenges and to the other side of the puzzles. And along the way, there's kind of a story of this. Seems like some like future thing where you see these parents who have blindfolds on and they have a kid, and like at a certain point they get him his own blindfold and then like pay to have him taken into the military, but it's kind of more like an ancient Roman kind of military looking thing, the way they kind of frame it. So I'm kind of interested in seeing like what that turns out to. And so you get to this area that's kind of the library of this army, where you're kind of just, the kids are just learning things.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're doing challenges there on each floor and moving your way up. And they add like an extra challenge once you beat the level, like refreshes it with an extra challenge to get across. There's some of them on the stream I'm just like, oh, I'm too stupid for this one.
Mm-hmm.
Another one's where I get through and it's like, well, that was easy. I don't know what. And I'm pretty sure it's like, oh, if I go back to that like in the morning, I would figure it out in 30 seconds versus trying to do that, you know, 10 o'clock at night sort of thing. But yeah, that game's pretty fun. I need to play some more of it, but the archive's up on our YouTube for that. It has a real nice kind of low poly look to it. Let's see, what else did I play? I played Hitman 2 on Tuesday. They put out their second map. I think it's the last one for the expansion pass, called Haven Island, which is an island off of the Maldives where this rich corporation that you've been kind of following throughout the story for Hitman 2 has this whole operation where they, I guess if you're like a high profile criminal, you can, and you have the money, you can kind of go there to get your like physical appearance changed to, and get a new identity and all that sort of thing. So like this is super rich resort for like white collar criminals and all that sort of stuff to get new lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go in as Tobias Reapers, which is your alias that you've used in all the other games, to kind of infiltrate and take out the three like top people in this island, which includes a bunch of, so there's lots of these like little islands that you can go around mm-hmm. on and take out, explore the resorts and buildings and such. There's some fun new stuff here, like there's trap doors in the houses, housing resorts. There, which are pretty cool when you can set up people to, you just turn on the water, their faucets, they go over and you examine that and turn it off. And if you have it set up right, they'll take a step back and they'll just fall right through this trap door,
mm-hmm.
Under there to their doom below in the water, which is hilarious when you see it go on. Some new stuff that you find there, like there are starfish you can collect, which are essentially, killer tools like ninja stars, which is great. Somebody, there's this whole bit where one of the guys, one of the targets is riding water skis or jet skis around, or he wants to, so you have to get him a key for that. And if you, this guy did a good video on this where he showed like, okay, you give him that, let him get ready to start, and then you throw an item at him as he starts the jet ski, and it just follows him as he's driving around like this omnipresent weapon. As soon as he comes back and stops, it just hits him in the head and kills him. He flies off, which is great, which I did. There's one of the things you can do with that jet ski is you can put an explosive device on it. And so I did that. And so when he was in the air, I exploded and his body just went flying like 150 feet in the air. Way out into the distance, so the physics are real good on that stuff. There's like a poisonous frog I found that you can use as lethal poison for anything you need. I guess you just like squeeze the poison off the frog into something, whatever. They don't really show you anything as far as like how he actually extracts the poison, but
mm-hmm.
That's definitely a thing you can do. There's just some other fun stuff in there as well. Yeah, they're definitely trying out some things with this map that I assume are going to lead into Hitman 3 when they start working on that. But yeah, this it's a really well done map and a lot of fun stuff to do there. I just need to work on doing some more of the other stuff that's in there. But yeah, it's a really well done map. And yesterday I played some Golf Story because that's on sale now on the Switch for $10. And that game is a lot of fun and really fucking stupid. as a comedic game, which is yeah, so I was still pretty early, and so I kind of when I jump back into it, I kind of figure out what I was doing, which thankfully it lists has notes in the menu, so you can like, okay, these are like the main quests you've gotten from people, and some of them are straightforward. One ended up with me using a wedge I had it's called like a shovel wedge to dig up, essentially dig up these hidden, hidden like chests that have money and other stuff in them, sort of stuff, which, the whole thing like with this second course is that it's a kind of like a caveman course, essentially like all the people that are on there talk like cavemen. Like the, there's lots of like dinosaur bones and tar pits all over there, course. And so they're mad that it's like your, home course has like stolen their idol, but then you find out it's been buried somewhere. So when you go back and take that back, you finally get access to be able to actually just play there. And so, yeah, it's a fun game. If you liked Mario Golf on like the original Game Boy, or Game Boy Color, that's very much what this game is. Just with a more of a fun, stupid story to it. And a lot more side stuff to do. That's just all about just having fun, silly, and stupid stuff that you have to do. And, yeah, I'm thinking about doing one of the Dragon Quest games that just came out on the Switch. Because from what I've seen, initial impressions, like, it's not great. Like, it had stuttering issues. Like, the characters move at 60 frames per second, but the backgrounds move at 30.
Ew!
That people are like, why? Why?
Oh my god.
I'm getting nausea just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, it's one of those things like, yeah, Square Enix, you have one job and you continually fuck it up on these games you want to be big in this, in the West. And it's like, they always find ways to just mess this up. And obviously there's issues that people have with like the art style, the clashing art styles and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I kind of want to get, I think, three just to play it and like kind of have some firsthand impressions of that stuff. So yeah, I got it.
And if you can get past that, three's a really solid game all around too.
Yeah. Yeah, because I figured one and two are probably like Final Fantasy 1 and 2, where it's kind of fairly bland.
They've not aged well.
Yeah.
2's aged a hell of a lot better than 1 has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been playing it on my phone, and it's like, it's perfectly fine, but it's very much just a grinding game, where you're just kind of...
That's fair.
Me not knowing where I'm going, I'm just kind of like, I'm just going to go explore, and if I run into a point where I can't, enemies are wiping me out quickly, it's probably not where I'm supposed to be. That sort of thing, but also if I can survive some fights, I can get some easy XP and money to buy some upgraded equipment that lets me survive a little bit better. But yeah, that's 3 seems like it's probably where they, you know, got their footing and like actually do some interesting story and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking about for tomorrow. But I'll figure it out tomorrow. So let's get to the, how about you, Brandon?
All right, well, first and foremost, I finished Borderlands 3, so I went to GameStop today, and I went and bought Control. I really don't have a whole lot to say right now, because it's so early. Other than the fact that it is really fucking weird. Of course, anybody who wants to can read Dan Reb's review over on Smashpad. But so far, you know, the little bit I've liked, I've liked it. You know, and I have been told that there's like a lot of stuff like hiding in like crevices and off the beaten path that give like a bit more like lore and stuff like that. Apparently there's like a weird puppet show or something that's in there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard there's lots of good.
Got to kind of hunt for it though, but
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, okay, I can dig that. But, so yeah, I've been playing that and, I've been having people sort of tell me about having, like, wildly varying numbers of, like, how long that game is supposed to last. Like, I've been told, like, it's, like, 20 hours or something. Which, to be honest, seems a little small from what I'm hearing from other places. So, I guess I'll see when I'm playing it. But anyway... So other than that, there's something, a big musical event that happened last week, for those of you who don't know. How many of you guys ever heard of The Who? And I don't mean the British band. I mean the other band called The Who.
There's another band called The Who?
Except they're spelled H-U. And they're from Mongolia.
Oh, well, that would be why.
Interesting.
They are a Mongolian folk metal band. They released their debut album, which is called The Garret, I think is what it's called. Now, there have been bands like The Who that have come out of Mongolia before. There are bands like Tingrin Cavalry and Nine Treasures, who basically are metal bands that use like lots of traditional Mongolian instruments in the music, like the horse head fiddle or the Tolvshur or the Jew harp. I mean, that's what it's also called, the Jew harp, the jaw harp. You guys know what a jaw harp is, right?
Yeah, it's the thing that goes in your mouth.
Yeah, you put it in your mouth and it goes, wow, 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 that thing. But here's the difference between those guys and The Who. With those other guys, they are primarily a metal band where, like, the electric guitars and stuff are out front and the other instruments are sort of along for the ride. Not the case with The Who. The traditional instruments with The Who are out front. And they also add lots of throat singing. You know what throat singing is?
You're going to have to explain that one.
Actually, I'll do you one better. How about I link to one of the videos they've got on YouTube?
Okay.
But okay.
Yeah, but I'll go ahead and put it on there. But here's one of the things I've realized since then. Mongolian, to, I guess, Western ears and a lot of other ears, I guess, is a very intimidating language to hear. Hmm. To be quite frank, they sound like Klingons. Really, I'm not joking. The video I just linked is for their song Wolf Totem, which is basically like an old Mongolian war song. And it fucking sounds like it. It is their music, like, they rely very heavy on the traditional stuff. And you would think, okay, so how is it a metal band? It's metal. It may not have, like, all the heavy instrumentation you would associate with metal, but it's got the fucking attitude.
Okay, I didn't know I wanted this, but yeah.
Just give it a listen. Just give it a listen. Give it a shot. Trust me, you'll thank me later.
Yeah. Well, your music picks have been pretty dead on the money for several times already, so.
Yeah. So, and other than that, I also made a visit at the used bookstore this week. I got a copy of a couple of books I've been looking for. One of them is an old book from the early 20th century called The Cup of Fury by Rupert Hughes. I could probably do like a whole fucking episode on Rupert Hughes simply because he's one of those guys who was not only like really prolific, but also like multi-talented and like heavily involved in, he was basically to this day now, even though back then he was much more famous, these days he's mostly known as the poor uncle of Howard Hughes. You guys know who Howard Hughes is, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Rupert Hughes was a writer who wrote, he wrote pretty much in every medium. He was a novelist, short story writer, poet, dramatist, who wrote both, he wrote both drama and musicals. He was also a very talented musician and piano player who composed a lot of the music for the stuff you would, for his theatrical work. He's also one of the major figures of early Hollywood. In fact, he actually wrote and directed what many consider to be like the first major Hollywood film that actually turns its lens towards Hollywood itself and how it works. It's good shit. The dude was incredibly – he was also a historian. He wrote a 3-volume biography on George Washington that's considered by historians to be like heavily influential and sort of humanizing and the way that Washington is treated in history, you know, away from hagiography and more towards realism, stuff like that. Dude, just a lot of shit. Also got the last book in the Land of Story series by Chris Colfer. Which is sad that that's the series, because I've absolutely loved that book series and everything with it. But it has to end eventually. And that's pretty much it. Anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well then, with that, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. Now, for this Random Factoid, I'm going to link a painting to everyone that I want everyone to have a look-see here. All right, hold on just a second, because I got to get this shit from Wikipedia. And you know how the formatting over there is. All right, here we go. Take a look at this painting right here. All right, now, you're probably looking like that, wow, information overload, right? Because it's like, holy shit, there is a, there's a lot going.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on, isn't there? And if you haven't noticed, the perception is also kind of fucked up too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it looks like everything's kind of like on a flat plane. Okay, so to tell you what this painting is, it's called the Fairy Feller's Masterstroke. And if that name sounds at all familiar, yes, this is where Freddie Mercury got the idea for that song from their second album.
Hmm.
Now, there's a fun little story behind this painting. So the guy who painted this was a gentleman by the name of Richard Dodd. He was a Victorian-era painter in the mid-1800s who began his career as a painter of what we call fairy paintings. So, you know, which that type of stuff was like really popular back then. So it was usually stuff of like, you know, images of like fairies, elves, trolls, gnomes, brownies, basically, you know, the type of shit you'll sometimes see in like a, fuck, I don't know, like a garage sale or something like that. But he made a ton of shit like this. And then in the mid-1800s, he went insane. He became increasingly convinced that his father was possessed by Satan. And so in 1843, he snuck up on his father and he stabbed him to death. He was then apprehended. He was tried and then he was committed to the state criminal lunatic asylum in Bethlehem Royal Hospital.
Well, I wonder why.
So while he was there, the people who were involved in that particular hospital were getting involved in a new concept that had started to sort of make the rounds at the time, which was the concept of art therapy. And they figured, you know, this guy, he was apparently a really talented artist before he was, committed to our asylum, you know. Maybe he would like to still make some money. Let's commission him for some stuff. And this ended up being one of the paintings they commissioned for him. He worked on this painting for 9 long years. Now, this wasn't the only painting he worked on during that time. He produced several pieces between then and the time this was finished. And for one thing, you're looking at that image and you'll notice there's a lot of like, it's almost like he really hates the idea of negative space. Like, yeah. Every cranny has to be filled with something.
Yeah.
That actually is pretty common for most of his work. Before he was committed, a lot of his fairy paintings exhibited the same thing. He kind of was really into making sure that every little nook and cranny, every piece, there was something in there. Would it be surprising to let you know that he suffered from obsessive compulsive disorder?
No. No.
Yeah. But there's another thing about this that is very interesting. And it has to do with the fact that the reason he was incarcerated. Like I said, he went nuts and he killed his father because he was possessed by but he thought his father was possessed by Satan.
Good Lord.
He was, eventually diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. And there are a lot of things in this painting that if you look closely enough, you'll start to realize that it shows. So for one thing, I mentioned the perception and how like weirdly one-dimensional it is. Like I said, he worked on this thing for 9 years, and his mental health deteriorated during that time. In fact, technically, this thing is kind of unfinished, because if you look down at the lower left corner there, you can notice some spots where he was still kind of working on filling out the spaces before he finally just decided to throw up his hands and say, okay, that's enough, I can't take it anymore. Also, something else about this painting, if you look closely enough in the tree branches, the flowers, the nooks and crannies, you'll notice there will be some eerie disembodied eyes that are gazing out from them. This is actually a very common thing that you'll often see with artists who suffer from paranoid schizophrenia. The idea that there's something always watching them. In fact, if you look at some of the characters, the way that they all seem to be like they're all like telling each other a secret or like they're conspiring or something. Again, very much part of his illness. But probably the biggest example of everything here of, you know, showing symptoms of what he was suffering from. If you look down in the sort of lower left quadrant, you'll notice a very kind of central figure. It's a squat little man with pointy ears, an enormous head, who's bald. He's got a big shiny forehead, and he's got a white beard. Do you see him?
Yeah, there he is.
Yeah. That's Richard Dodd. That's actually a self-portrait right there.
Oh.
Yeah. And if you look at the way he's his overall demeanor, how there's like all this chaos and stuff happening around him, and he's like absolutely incapable of doing anything about it. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So like I said, this wasn't the only thing he did during his time when he was incarcerated. He did a lot of images, like a lot of like watercolor sketches of people being killed with a sword.
Well, because that's just lovely.
And you know they killed them with the sword because the sword is dripping with blood. And like I said, he didn't do just one of those. He did a bunch of those. And all of them kind of have the same overall format. They kind of look like this. It's usually, here he goes. Here's one right here. It usually looks like this. It's usually a guy in like a castle setting who's like standing over a dead body, and like the sword is like bleeding quite copiously.
I mean, it looks like the guy on the playing cards.
Yeah.
He looks like the Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah. This particular painting is supposed to represent the murder of Henry the VI. But
blood drips that way.
No, it doesn't really work that way, but
yeah.
There's also another one of the same theme. And like I said, they all have sort of the same overall theme. It's a dude standing over a dead body with a dripping bloody sword. Can you tell that this guy had issues?
Yeah. It certainly seems that way.
So he finally passed away in 1886 from a lung disease of some kind. They never say what, but exactly it was he suffered from, but it's ultimately what killed him. He ended up staying in Bethlehem for 20 years before he was moved to Broadmoor Hospital. Many of his paintings now actually rest in Broadmoor itself, including the Fairy Feller's Masterstroke. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Nice. Are you liking these little art history pieces?
Yeah, I actually am.
Well, I got several more, but I'll get to them another time. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, as always, it is time to start off with the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our asshole of the week. Are you ready?
Oh,
are you ready to get into it?
Go for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, last week, it was announced that there was a whistleblower complaint from someone in the intelligence community that had sent a, like I said, who had sent a message to the, I can't remember if it was either the State Department or one of the committees or something, with several complaints of several incidences that they said showed a wanton act of, you know, just not, just criminality in general. A lot of it involving trying to get foreign like I said, this shit happens so fast I can barely mouth the words. Interfering in, having foreign countries interfere in our election on Trump's behalf. The one that everybody was really sparking to, I have no idea what I'm saying now.
It's okay. It's Friday night. Keep drinking. We're still here.
Anyway, it was involved something that went down with Ukraine. It was like, okay, so what was the Ukraine? Apparently, Trump had a conversation with the current president of Ukraine, who used to be a comedian, by the way, that involved them withholding and or somehow making a deal of sending some kind of funding, military funding or something that was promised to the Ukraine, unless they helped him get some kind of dirt on Joe Biden. And at that, at first, nobody was quite sure exactly what they were talking about as far as dirt. It actually, what it ended up involving was something to do with Biden's son. Some kind of, because something involving Joe Biden's son getting a certain, I think it was one of Ukraine's attorney generals fired over something like that. Mm-hmm. And then basically the bottom fell out because as soon as that came on, shit moved really fast. Suddenly it came public. Suddenly it was like, even like we did not see this kind of movement when the Russian investigation was going on.
Yeah.
And you remember how long that shit dragged out. No, this happened in a matter of days. Suddenly it went like, okay, there's a transcript. The House votes, okay, we need to see the transcript. The Senate then unanimously votes to have the whistleblower complaint in question be made public. The House started calling for hearings with the whistleblower themselves. I guess for whatever reason, they thought this would somehow exonerate him or somehow make everything look least bad. They released a memorandum. Now, you keep hearing that it's a transcript on the news. It's not a transcript. It's a memorandum that's a summary of what the conversation was about.
Yeah.
And it did nothing to smooth it over.
Trump kept saying, this is going to prove that I've done nothing wrong.
Yeah, and it actually fucking says in plain flat words that he did something wrong.
Yeah, it's – so I'm looking at the whole thing here that CNN has written up.
Mm-hmm.
It's the third thing in here.
Yep.
There's the president and Zelensky, President Zelensky. So it's like, yeah, talking about how – we do more to help Ukraine than most of European countries. He says, a lot of the European countries are the same way, so I think it's something you want to look at, but the United States has been very, very good to Ukraine. I wouldn't say that it's reciprocal necessarily because things are happening that are not good, but the United States has been very, very good to Ukraine. And Zelensky says, some stuff, and he goes, I would also like to thank you for your great support in the area of defense. We are ready to continue to cooperate. For the next step, specifically, we are almost ready to buy more javelins from the United States for defense purposes. The president, I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot. Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server. They say Ukraine has it. There are a lot of things that went on, the whole situation. I think you're surrounding yourself with some of the same people. I would like to have the attorney general call you or your people, and I would like you to get to the bottom of it. As you saw yesterday, that whole non since ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance, but they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. Whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if that's possible. He's like, yes, it's very important for me and everyone that you just mentioned earlier. Yeah, there's more stuff here. Let's see. Zelensky says, I would also like and hope to see him having your trust and your confidence in personal relations with you so we can cooperate even more. So I will personally tell you that one of my assistants spoke with Mr. Giuliani just recently, and we are hoping very much that Mr. Giuliani will be able to travel to Ukraine. We will meet once he comes to Ukraine. I just wanted to assure you once again that you have nobody but friends around us. Make sure that I surround myself with the best and most experienced people. I just want to tell you that we are friends. We are great friends, and you, Mr. President, have friends in our country so we can continue our strategic partnership. And I think Trump, let's see next. Mr. Giuliani is a highly respected respected man. He was the mayor of New York City, a great mayor, and I would like him to call you. I'll ask him to call you along with the Attorney General. Rudy very much knows what's happening. He's a very capable guy. If you speak to him, that would be great. The former ambassador from the United States, the woman, was bad news, and the people she was dealing with in Ukraine were bad news. So I just want to let you know that. The other thing, there are a lot of talk of Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people wanted to find out about, so that whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, so if you can look into it, it sounds horrible. And yeah, like, more stuff. Like, this is, like, the very beginning.
Yeah. It's very beginning, and it's already, like, holy shit, he committed, like, two crimes right there.
And this is the summary. Not the exact whole thing.
Again, so, this is the thing that's supposed to make him look good.
Yeah.
Which suddenly makes you realize, if this is just the summary that's supposed to make him look good, holy shit, what's on the transcript then?
Yeah, and it's – and yeah, because kind of we have this whole thing where he's doing this and – oh, jeez. I think I've seen like a lot of stuff is coming out as we're, you know, doing this show. We'll probably summarize some of it next week. But stuff about them trying to suppress information about other calls to other countries. Very much engaging in what people are calling a cover-up. Hmm. Pelosi, yeah. Elizabeth Warren, and all this shit. It's like, you know, it doesn't work, right? and yeah, so I guess the next thing they did immediately after this is they had talking points for like for their GOP people.
Yeah.
How to respond to the stuff with this. They fucking sent it out to the Democrats and to the media.
Yeah, somehow they – somebody – I don't know how that fucking happened, but yeah, they ended up sending out all their talking points to the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically demanded, like, delete it. Don't talk about this. It's like, no, it's on the internet. it says things like, press reports have given currency to flat-out falsehoods about the call. The transcript clearly shows there was no quid pro quo or anything else inappropriate about the conversation between President Trump and President Zelensky. Myth. The president made a mysterious promise to Zelensky in return for Ukraine, reviving an investigation relating to Joe Biden and his son. Fact, there was no such promise. The president wanted allegations of corruption potentially involving an American official to be investigated. It's like, there's a bunch of these. Mm-hmm. And so the nice thing with the way that Twitter has this set up, I started showing all the Republicans that start spreading this talking points. Rudy Giuliani, no quid pro quo. Just an agreement on both sides to fully investigate very serious allegations regarding corruption at the highest levels of both our countries. Now, are we ever going to investigate Biden? Lindsey Graham, wow, impeachment over this? This is what a nothing, non-quid pro quo burger. Democrats have lost their minds when it comes to President Trump. Dan Crenshaw, this impeachment inquiry seems worse for Biden than it is for Trump. Now the Hunter Biden-Ukraine issue is on everyone's radar, and we know that Democrats overstepped with their quid pro quo accusations. Have to wonder whether they did this to help Warren Sanders. Jim Jordan jumped on this. Let's see, Congresswoman Debbie Lesko of Arizona. Let's see, Chuck Grassley says he's not bothered by this. Rep. Mark Green of Tennessee. Joe Walsh called people out, called Jim Jordan out. Said, Jim, I served with you in Congress. If Barack Obama did what Donald Trump did just on his phone call alone, he'd be screaming for Obama's impeachment. I know you know that, my friend. There's a list I saw somewhere. I don't have it here. Just like, here's like a list of how many people have read it on the Republican side. There's like a bunch that haven't read it. It's like, it's like 5 pages long. This isn't like that bullshit healthcare shit where they gave people like hundreds of pages of stuff to read and
hours. They can't read 5 pages.
No.
No.
They can't do what their third graders are expected to do.
No.
Oh.
No, that's not their job.
They're running a country. They're too busy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some Republicans that have been calling them out. People like Marco Rubio, Mitt Romney, people that are very much up for, you know, talking shit about Trump, but never actually doing anything about it. But there's like lots of stuff that's come out after this of things like 30 Republicans in the Senate are willing to vote against Trump for an impeachment, but they need it to be the voting to be secret to do it. And it's like, Jesus Christ, people.
That's not how it works.
Yeah, it's like way to put your, you know, reputation where your mouth is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, for those who want to know, since they now have like, once they actually do have like, they've started essentially an impeachment, and once that actually the impeachment inquiry starts, they get broad powers to basically get a look at pretty much anything and everything they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And there's the whole thing with the whistleblower. They put out the actual report he put in for he or she. And New York Times decided, hey, let's try and just give as much information about this person so people can figure out who it is.
Yeah.
In a really shitty way. It's like, this doesn't have anything to do with journalism.
Yeah.
You're just trying to be the first one out there with this information that is not relevant at all to what's being said. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that is coming out over the last couple of days. We'll kind of let it simmer around and get the best stuff for next week. But yeah, a lot of shit's been going down.
Yeah, like we said, it's been moving very fast.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if we get a whole slew of new shit next week.
And it's not even just getting rid of Trump. Now it's like, okay, you can take down William Barr,
Rudy
Giuliani, other people in the administration. Maybe Mike
Paul Manafort is probably involved in there somewhere.
Yeah. I think Trump
suddenly it makes that sudden Sarah Sanders, that sudden exit she made, suddenly timeline kind of adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah. And there's like suggesting that like Trump would take Mike Pence down with him, who would be the president after that?
Yep.
Would that be Pelosi?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, I guess he was like saying recently like he doesn't consider her the Speaker of the House. It's like, is that because you're going to make her the president?
Yeah, right. I mean, he's not going to have a problem throwing Pence under the bus.
Yeah.
No. Rumor has it that he's been on the fence about keeping him as vice president for a while.
Yeah, trading up for somebody else.
Like he does his wives.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You anyway, and now our hero of the week, and you know who it is.
Oh yeah,
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi finally grew a fucking spine and announced the launch of an impeachment inquiry after Trump's call to the Ukrainian president.
Yeah, and
the world rejoiced.
Yeah, because it's not like this is the thing that's impeachable. He has a long list of stuff that's impeachable.
Yeah.
This was just the icing on the cake.
Yeah, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
So she basically went in and she said, okay, I am officially starting an impeachment inquiry, which means, you know, that committee, that the people who's going to be on that committee are basically going to have very broad powers to get information they want.
Yeah, it's like they have six committees that are working on this, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a lot of the main people that already at the head of their committees, Adam Schiff. Blanking on the others. But yeah, like any notable Democrats in the House you can think of, they're probably involved in this in some form.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people say that what finally, like, because a lot of people have been saying up to this point the reason Pelosi hasn't announced one is because she didn't have the votes, which is kind of true. But what finally sent it over the edge was when John Lewis went and made a speech where he basically said, "I now formally support forming an impeachment inquiry for President Trump." And John Lewis is not perfect by any means, but he's one of those guys in Congress who is highly respected. He's a civil rights veteran. He bled for the cause, you know. So, you know, when he says something, people listen. And I guess that's finally what made Nancy just go over the edge and said, all right, fine.
Yeah.
Also, probably the donors. I'm sure there was a lot of phone calls from the donors are like, okay, yeah, you need to get on this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not be let's be candid here. That's also a major part of it.
Yeah,
especially if they're coming from businesses who are starting to suffer because of his trade war with China.
Yeah.
Like all of them.
Follow the money.
Yeah. And speaking of following the money, I have never seen so many grown men hate a 16-year-old girl so viciously in my lifetime as I have with people reacting to Greta Thunberg.
Is this not just an absolute fucking national travesty, what they're trying to put this poor girl through?
Yeah, so Greta Thunberg, she's our other hero of the week this week. She went before the UN's Climate Action Summit and basically told them all to go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
It's like, look, I shouldn't be here. I should be at school. You know, me and my fellow teenagers, we shouldn't be the ones who have to come up here and tell you people to do your fucking jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's – the transcript is pretty great for this. Like, my message is that we'll be watching you.
Yeah.
This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean, yet you all come to us, young people, for hope. Mm-hmm. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. Yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We're in the beginning of a mass extinction. And all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight. You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency, but no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and I refuse to believe.
I hate to tell you something, Greta, but...
Yeah, that's evil.
Yeah,
they know it. They know it. They just don't care.
Yeah. Popular idea of cutting our emissions in half in 10 years only gives us a 50% chance of staying below 1.5 degrees Celsius and a risk of setting off irreversible chain reactions beyond human control. 50% may be acceptable to you, but those numbers do not include tipping points, most feedback loops, additional warming hidden by toxic air pollution, or the aspects of equity and climate justice. They also rely on my generation sucking hundreds of billions of tons of your CO2 out of the air with technologies that barely exist. So 50% risk is simply not acceptable to us. We who have to live with the consequences. To have a 67% chance of staying below a 1.5 degree global temperature rise, the best odds given by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the world had 420 gigatons of CO2 left to emit back on January 1st, 2018. Today, that figure is already down to less than 350 gigatons. How dare you pretend that this can be solved with just business as usual, some technical solutions. With today's emission levels, that remaining CO2 budget will be entirely gone within less than 8.5 years. There will not be any solutions or plans presented in time with these figures here today because these numbers are too uncomfortable, and yet you're still not mature enough to tell it like it is. You are failing us, but the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. If you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you. We will not let you get away with this. Right here, right now, is where we draw the line. The world is waking up, and change is coming, whether you like it or not. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you really can't add any more to that, can you?
No.
And yet a bunch of dumbasses tried to.
Yeah. There's also a great GIF that came out of this.
The one where it basically where it looks like she's trying to set Donald Trump on fire with her mind.
Yeah, where she's just staring angrily at something and the camera zooms out. It's like, oh, here's Trump.
Yeah.
It's just like perfect GIF. And then there's a great video that came out afterwards about the Greta Thunberg helpline.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great video. You should watch it. But yeah, it's let's see if I can find it here. Yeah, the Greta Thunberg helpline for adults angry at a child. The video opens with a shot of Humphreys offering confessional style testimony. Hi, I'm a middle aged man with an embarrassing problem. I get irrationally angry at a Swedish girl who wants to save the planet. they move on to the next thing. If you're a grown adult who needs to yell at a child for some reason, the Greta Thunberg helpline is here to tolerate you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, another one coming up.
Don't put any more. The whole thing is funny and everybody.
There's a great thing with the woman, older woman on there. She's basically saying, like, well, do you want to set up your own global agency for this? She's like, no, it's a lot easier to just shit on a little girl.
Uh-huh.
Showing other people's ideas.
Yeah.
Sort of stuff. It's a great watch. Yeah.
They also, I think she also went before, I think it was, she did a hearing at Congress. I can't remember if it was, I think it might have been this week. It might have been the previous one.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah. Where it tried to kind of, there was that one guy who tried to kind of gaslight her and trying to move the whole, discussion over to China instead of the emissions that the U.S. was putting out, and she wasn't falling for it.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't give a shit about civility politics.
Yeah, it was all these dumbass grinning old manners like, I ain't that cute, and then she turns it around, and suddenly they ain't so happy anymore. Because, you know, a 16-year-old just embarrassed the hell out of them on television.
Yeah.
And then it got especially bad because there was this one, I can't remember which show it was on Fox News, but there was like a debate between a couple people. And one of them was this guy from, I think it was the Daily Wire.
Michael Knowles?
Yeah. Who basically kept harping on and on about the fact that Greta Thunberg is quote unquote mentally ill. She's not, by the way. She is on the autism spectrum. You know, like me.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, I really don't like this guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, neither does, like, probably 3/4 of the world right now.
And apparently neither did a lot of the people at Fox News, because they actually banned him from ever reappearing on the show, the channel indefinitely, and actually gave a written apology to Greta Thunberg herself.
Yeah. And the guy that was on the other side of the discussions basically like, how dare you?
He's like, you're talking about a little kid. You act like a grown-up when you're talking about.
Yeah. So here's what Michael Knowles said. He said, the climate hysteria movement is not about science. If it were about science, it would be led by scientists rather than by politicians and a mentally ill Swedish child who is being exploited by her parents and by the international left. Then Han responds, like, relax, skinny boy. I got this. You're attacking a child. You're a grown man. And he continues, Knowles.
He's like, take it back, take it
back.
She
is mentally ill. She has autism. She has obsessive compulsive disorder. She has selective mutism. She had depression. And it's like, he's just like, basically just telling him, like, no, you need to shut the fuck up, basically, and apologize. He just refuses to. So, Fox News, apologize for that. So they had no plans for Knowles to appear as a guest on future shows, and as well as writing articles for FoxNews.com. The comment made by Michael Knowles, who was a guest on The Story tonight, was disgraceful. We apologize to Greta Thunberg and to our viewers. And of course, she tweets, when haters go after your looks and differences, it means they have nowhere left to go. And then you know you're winning. I have Asperger's, and that means I'm sometimes a bit different from the norm. Given the right circumstances, being different is a superpower.
It's true. He's also, just so you know, he's one of the main one of the big columnists for the Daily Wire, which for those who don't know, that's Ben Shapiro's outfit.
Yeah, and guess who decided to double down on his bullshit? Michael Knowles, tweeting out afterwards, responding to somebody, but he says, of course not, but children should never be exploited for political purposes. Mentally ill children are particularly vulnerable.
Again, she's not mentally ill.
Holy shit.
Like, how many times do we have to tell you that?
He's just fucking asking for it now.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, buddy, I'm also on the autism spectrum. You want to go toe to toe with me, little boy?
Yeah.
I'll break you in half, you little prick. God. Ugh.
It wasn't the only Fox News person.
Unfortunately, no, because Laura Ingraham compared her to the children of the corn.
And her brother decided.
And they don't. You do not get along, by the way. They're pretty much estranged. And
He tweeted about this season. Clearly, my sister's paycheck is more important than the world her three adopted kids will inherit. I can no longer apologize for a sibling who I no longer recognize. I can and will continue to call out the monstrous behavior and the bully commentary born out of anger.
Mm. Way to go, Curtis Ingram.
Mm-hmm.
Way to fucking go.
All right. Oh, and it just gets better because in the Senate, which, by the way, controlled by Republicans, might I add, put out a report this week that found that the NRA acted as a foreign asset for Russia during the 2016 election.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Uh-huh. And here we go.
Yep. Let's see. Yeah, tax-exempt organizations are barred from using funds for the personal benefits of its officials or for actions significantly outside their stated missions. Revelations Senate report raised questions about whether the NRA face civil penalties or lose its tax-exempt status, which New York is definitely working on. And kind of the way this also ties into the current news. Guess who Trump contacted about helping him with his defense for impeachment?
Ooh, tell us.
Tell us, please.
Wayne LaPierre of the NRA. Oh.
They've said that they're actually willing to put NRA money behind it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, the Russians are involved now.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to keep their puppets in power.
And, oh boy, like I said, everything is just, it's all happening so fast.
Yep.
Also the U.S. Special Envoy to the Ukraine, yeah, he resigned a few hours ago.
Oh, really?
It's like not only is the House of Cards falling down, but it's also on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, yeah, pretty much.
All right. And that's kind of sort of the end of that part of the show. We still got a bunch of other shenanigans, but all that's basically kind of the end of it, because a bunch of other awful shit happened this week, too. For example, a U.S. Army soldier was arrested by the FBI earlier this week, when he sent bomb-making instructions over the internet.
Yep, to... supposedly to help a plot to bomb a major U.S. network. I imagine begins with C and ends with N.
Yeah, it actually is CNN. They've said publicly. And also was apparently going after Beto O'Rourke as well, I believe, was part of that plot as well.
Yeah, it's a 24-year-old private first-class infantry soldier in Kansas, where he's stationed. Good thing they got him. Before anything happened?
Yeah,
right?
The U.S. Army actually has they have a sizable issue with shit like this in the Army right now. Because, back in the early, after the, 9/11 fever died out, their recruitment numbers kind of plunged. So they had to start kind of lowering the standards to let more and more people in.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And I guess this guy, before he joined the military in 2017, traveled to, guess where, what country?
Russia.
Oh, Ukraine.
Oh.
Okay.
To fight with another right-wing group called Right Sector.
Oh, he was one of those groups. Yeah. I guess he was fighting with the people in Crimea, the separatists, I guess.
Yeah. Says he also allegedly wrote about his ability to make cell phone IEDs in late 2018. Last month, he discussed a plan to conduct an attack in the United States with FBI confidential source. Talked with the informant about killing members of the far-left group, Antifa, as well as destroying nearby cell towers or a local news station. He also suggests bombing the headquarters of a major American news network.
Mm-hmm.
In a discussion on the app Telegram with an FBI undercover employee, he reportedly offered instructions on building an IED, though the FBI affidavit also says that some of the instructions would not create a viable explosive device. So didn't even have the plans for a good device either.
A device, whether it worked or not.
Well, I mean, you know, at least you didn't really know how.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
I believe that qualifies as terrorism. Just
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at the very least, conspiracy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or accomplice.
Mm.
There's about like a dozen or so charges you could put here.
Mm-hmm. That could probably put them away for a dozen enough. Or so years.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway. So moving on from that. So over in Michigan, there's a place called Mackinac Island.
Yeah. Mackinac.
Mackinac. Sorry.
Mackinac.
Mackinac. Yeah,
it makes no sense, but it's Mackinac.
It's Michigan. They're basically...
Yeah. Show me on the hand where it is.
Well, it's before the thumb.
Yeah. But anyway. Over in Mackinac, they have a provision there where cars, automobiles of any kind are banned.
No. It's strictly foot and bicycle traffic.
Yeah.
And possibly a few horses.
Yeah. The one, and basically, like, the one exception they give is, like, for government vehicles. Within
mainly
reason.
For, yeah, for, like, what is it? I think it's for service vehicles and emergency vehicles kind of things.
Yeah, it's one of the huge draws of the island is that it is so pedestrian friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you ride ferries to get over there, and it's, you know, it's just like, it's a really cool place. Everybody around here loves to go or talk about going.
Yeah.
Yeah, like and the video so they have so, of the
and I guess the air is very clean.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it's...
Still Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but, you know...
But it's Michigan minus all the car exhaust.
Mm. Right, and Lake Superior is, you know, very... nice and pretty there and
yeah.
Crystal clear and all that stuff.
It's like, it's just a nice
pristine.
Scenic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Vice President Pence, brought a huge motorcade there.
What a shithead.
Yeah, and like it was like 16 something vehicles or something.
There's absolutely no way anybody planning to go to Mackinac Island doesn't know.
Mm. I think it was like the last, I think it was Obama went there. He went there by carriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that would be absolutely on point for the area.
Yeah.
But yeah. This had to be intentional. There's nobody that could be that stupid.
Yeah, because they it says here they had the monster SUV shipped to the island on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
This was the 21st, so for Saturday.
And everybody was probably throwing up in their mouth when they saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the tweets I have here is from one Greta Van Susteren. Hmm. It's like a motorcade on Mackinac Island. How can that be? Google Mackinac Island.
Yeah.
Basically, they're just annoyed by this.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Never should have happened.
Gross.
It looks like very wooded area, so it's not exactly like a place where...
No.
Snipers would be, you'd be able to get any good sort of shot.
Yeah.
Like, if you're worried about that.
Yeah, the bigger thing is, it's just a huge disrespect.
It is, completely.
Oh, yeah. Just,
Yeah, yeah. They need to have video playing during the re-election season. Yeah. And isn't Michigan a swing state?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. anyway. So, move on from there. Obviously, as we know, the primary for the Democratic nomination is still ongoing. And right now, the, like, major contenders is between, I think it's, like, Biden, Warren, Sanders, and I think Kamala Harris.
Probably Buttigieg.
Maybe Buttigieg. He's kind of closing in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's still early, and, again, the actual election doesn't happen until next year.
Yeah, 14 months.
Yeah, we're like 14 months away from the vote. So I just hope you guys up in Canada appreciate the few weeks that you have to suffer through this shit, and the only few weeks, because...
Yeah, it's nice having a very short election cycle and then quiet periods afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good for the sanity.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, so obviously in that big four, you've got both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are like the big, like, the major, like, progressive anti-Wall Street part of the party that's represented. And the Wall Street donors who donate to the Democratic Party have actually threatened to either not vote or vote for Donald Trump if Warren becomes the nominee.
Yeah, which one of the tweets Elizabeth Warren put out is like, I'm Elizabeth Warren and I approve this message.
That's good.
Yeah. Basically, it's like, well, that's a great endorsement of Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
Because we still remember what Wall Street did 10 years ago.
Yeah. Although I am wondering why specifically they said just Warren, because Bernie's also up there too, you know.
Yeah, but I think they figure she's more likely to get it out of the bunch that's going on right now.
Yeah,
she's the one that they fear the most right now.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I like her, but compared to Bernie, she's kind of weak sauce. So if that's how they're reacting to the idea of Warren getting the nomination, just imagine how much they'll freak out if Sanders gets it.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, next up, over in the UK, another country that fortunately we're not alone in all this bullshit.
They got their own blonde mopped asshole up there.
Yeah. The Supreme Court of the United Kingdom ruled that the suspension of Parliament by Boris Johnson was unlawful.
Yep.
Boris. Done fucked up, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. And for those of you who don't know, since this ruling came down, you know how we sometimes have that rhetoric about partisan courts over here in the U.S.? Well, guess who started recently mirroring that over in the U.K.?
Boris.
Uh-huh. Well, him and his cohorts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think the Conservatives were trying to essentially put the Parliament on recess.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically voted against that.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone just seems like he's just trying to do whatever he can to get his deal in.
Yeah.
Or whatever deal he has.
Yeah. And it looks like it's not going to happen.
No.
And like for this, the record, those who don't know, the Liberal Democrats... that particular party has put on their party platform that if elected to a majority, they will actually cancel Brexit outright. So, yeah, it's becoming increasingly obvious that that whole it's becoming increasingly untenable.
Yeah,
this court.
I like to have the papers, the front pages of the papers. The Daily Mirror has next to his picture, "Man with no shame" in giant text.
I mean, they're not wrong.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's just we're, you know, it's just good once in a while to be able to look in the binoculars and say, "Hey, see that? We're not the only ones who were screwed."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this guy that I know over in the UK. he runs a Facebook page called Tuckered.
Yeah.
And he said, I couldn't give a solitary fuck what your views on Brexit are. Yesterday's parliamentary shit show should have sent shivers down the spine of any right-thinking person. I've said it before, and I'll keep screaming it until I'm hauled into a fucking re-education camp for being politically opposed to our new fascist overlords. Boris is not a clown. What you're seeing is not chaos. If you're still under the impression that things aren't going your way, then you're both deluded and naive. He's fucking winning. He's literally trumping his way to victory. Yep. Yep.
And he knows how to exploit the oaf angle. Mm-hmm. Was it Trump can't.
Yeah. Anyway. Next up, Juul Laboratories. You guys have heard that name before, haven't you?
How is this? J-U-U-L. Oh, yeah.
These guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have a friend, family member who vapes or uses e-cigs of any kind, you're familiar with Juul. They're the ones who put out the actual liquids.
Yeah.
That you use to smoke. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen empty Juul cartridges just strewn out in the middle of just everywhere.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they're almost as annoying an eyesore as cigarette butts.
Yeah.
They're more dangerous than cigarette butts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like shit's finally starting to get a little chaotic over there because their CEO recently stepped down from his position. He was replaced by an executive from Altria, and they have stopped all marketing.
Yeah. So if you don't know Altria... they are the ones that own Marlboro.
Yeah. Marlboro. They used to be Marlboro. Yeah.
Yeah. They put essentially an exec from that in charge of Juul, essentially just going dark.
Mm-hmm.
And they do acknowledge that, where does it say? They're talking about how, their early image was based on kind of advertising with youth in their ads.
Mm-hmm.
Let us focus on the flavored stuff, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Being an alternate to cigarettes, which still doesn't make it good.
Yeah.
No. The big one they've been doing, especially where I live, is they've been trying to use it as the making the change over from carcinogenic cigarettes over to something that might be able to help you quit. Hmm. Except it doesn't help you quit.
No, yeah.
You're still addicted to nicotine. You're just not smoking cigarettes anymore.
Yeah, you're just changing form factor.
And just in case you think like any of these companies are good, I think pretty much all of them are owned by tobacco companies.
Of course they're all owned by tobacco companies.
Or have major investments by tobacco companies.
Yeah.
Like, they're not different anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at first they were, but they are very much running the same playbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only, the threat of government regulation that gets them to do anything.
Yeah. So, yeah, hope they collapse.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Next up, there was a man over in Philadelphia that managed to save some children from a burning home. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. And I guess while he was getting interviewed on the news, he made sure to knock the Eagles wide receiver.
Yeah, this was fun.
Because again, Philly.
Yeah. Making sure not to lose sight of the important things
on Earth.
Yeah, he was talking about it and got to the point where he said, my man would just start throwing babies out the window and we was catching him on like Aguilar and his mishaps. I like to put that out there. Yeah, and what's his name? It's like, let's see, Hakeem Laws, who Nelson Aguilar on Twitter responded to this saying, "Thank you for being here on the community. We'd like to invite you and your family to the next home game. Twitter helped me get me in touch with him."
Mm-hmm.
And so they're working on getting some tickets to him, figure out when he can come to one of the games.
Mm-hmm. That's a
sort of thing. And he's also selling a shirt that's like, I forget what it says on it, but has the hashtag, like, unlike Aguilar on it. And that's, They're selling it with proceeds going to the family whose home burned down.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of doing everything right while having some fun along the way.
Yeah, he's being a good sport about it. That's a, something you don't see very often.
Yeah. I guess I'd say Google for Hakim Laws, H-A-K-I-M. Should be able to get you to the shirts through there, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so, I mean, let's be honest. The only way that would be more Philly is if this dude was, like, if my man was chewing on a cheesesteak while throwing batteries at the reporter's head.
Yeah, next year.
Anyway. Next up, Mattel. You know, famous for putting out Barbie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Teresa, were you a Barbie girl?
No, actually. I had one, and it was a mistake that I even got it. And it's a very passive-aggressive story that I could probably give you in 45 seconds.
Okay, go.
Okay, age, not even 11, age 8, I was given like $25 and said, go buy a Christmas present.
Yeah.
So I went into Toys R Us and I bought a Barbie.
Yeah.
And I brought it home and put it in my room and I started playing with it because I'd never had one before. Age 8 had never had a Barbie before.
Yeah.
And my grandmother comes in and she's like, that was supposed to be for your friend, blah, 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 blah. And just like rode my ass for probably 10 years over that one. So that was my only Barbie and it was my guilt trip Barbie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there we are. Yeah. Well, Mattel's kind of sensed which way the wind's blowing these days. And they recently revealed their new gender neutral dolls.
I saw those, and they don't look bad at all.
Yeah, they're called Creatable World.
Yeah, I think they did a good job.
Yeah, they say here, Mattel tests a doll with 250 families across 7 states, including 15 children who identify as trans, gender non-binary, or gender fluid, and rarely see themselves reflected in the media, let alone their playthings. And like the cool thing is it has a bunch of like customization to it. Mm-hmm. Different hairstyles, long and short, a bunch of different kinds of clothing and some items to go with them. So you can kind of tailor it how you want it to look.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not something you could do with Barbie.
Yeah.
Unless you had the money to get, like, to cut the hair and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, thank God that that Time article doesn't have a comment section.
Yeah.
Right. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, instead of Barbies, I had all of the Planet of the Apes, Evel Knievel, and Star Trek dolls. So that was really where I stood, by the way.
All right.
All right. So,
well, anyway.
Yeah, these dolls look fine. I mean, they actually look like well done, well designed.
Yeah.
Reasonably priced. Well, there you go. Well, Mattel tends to be a little on the expensive side.
Yeah, yeah, we was fixing to say. This is still Mattel we're talking about, dude. Anyway, speaking of knowing which way the wind's blowing, McDonald's has recently decided to join the plant-based meat patty world with their new PLT.
Oh, great.
Yep. Plant, lettuce, and tomato. They're using Beyond's patties.
Okay.
All right.
They're Beyond not bad.
Burger. Yeah,
they're not bad.
They're launching like a test in 28 restaurants next week. Which Tim Hortons, KFC, and Dunkin' Brands are also working with Beyond's Patties for their own stuff. So good to see
Beyond
them.
Beyond is getting some momentum.
Yeah, Beyond and Impossible, both of them. They know a trend when they see one, and fortunately, this is a trend that's a good one. So,
yeah.
I hope it sticks around.
Like, I've been seeing some morning shows and stuff where, like, it's clearly somebody who's been paid off by the meat industry saying how bad these things are for you.
Yeah, I constantly get notifications for articles of like, oh, here's how nutritious those plant-based patties are. And it's like, that's not the point. The point is not having them be meat.
Yeah.
But yeah, it says here they're going to be priced about $6.49. 20 restaurants in southwestern Ontario starting on Monday.
They might have to bring the price down $1 before they release them nationwide. Because that's a little expensive for McDonald's.
Those are Canadian.
That's Canadian.
Oh, that's Canada. Okay. Well, in that case,
it'll be like $2 here.
Yeah, that would be about, well, $6.49 Canadian would be about $5 over there.
Yeah. Because so. I think you guys actually have, like, when it comes to, you guys actually put, like, sales tax and stuff into the actual price.
No, that's separate.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck. Okay, so do you guys tip?
Yeah, we tip.
Okay. Yeah, they tip.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's, okay. There's no sales tax on food. So.
No. I was going to say, because I'm getting my goddamn passport and I'm going to come visit Canada.
Yeah.
I need to know
and
these
might
things.
Stay there for a while. Anyway.
I don't know.
There is. Yeah, restaurant stuff there is. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, then. Next up. The Labradoodle. Any of you guys ever had a Labradoodle before?
No.
God. Well, we've seen them. Didn't Obama have one or mm-hmm. probably still has one?
Yeah. Yeah. Well... Creator of the Labradoodle came out this week and said it was his life's regret.
Really? What's he... What's
like,
he
I created about? A monster.
Yeah, because...
So cute.
Well,
it's not the
yeah,
dogs but... themselves. It's sort of the industry around
yeah,
creating these dogs.
Yeah.
That and try to exploit whole... it for monetary gain.
Hmm. Well, yeah, and the whole...
Puppy mills. They're a thing.
Yep.
And for every pet that's bought from a puppy mill, I mean, that's horrible. And... a pet in a shelter is going to be euthanized.
Yeah.
Yeah. As it says here, people are, as you said here, people are just breeding for the money. Scrupulous breeders are crossing poodles with inappropriate dogs simply so they can say they're the first to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this guy is in Australia, just in case you need to know. But yeah, they were originally created as a way to get like a hypoallergenic dog
mm-hmm.
that people that had issues with dog allergies could have one and not be suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the time. And yeah, it was created in the late 1980s, so about 30 years old.
So, you know, like the inventor of the Keurig, he was trying to fulfill a very niche need. And yeah.
Yeah, that happened.
Now he's got regret.
Yeah.
And I understand.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. Him.
Yeah.
Oof. Anyway, moving on. This week, geologists discovered that there is a former eighth continent from 140 million years ago. And there's a good chance that you're currently standing on top of it.
Yeah, so this, as they're calling it, Greater Adria, was formed ages ago, about, I think it existed about 240 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As sort of Pangaea was separating, as the tectonic plates sort of separated. Let's see, where does it say here? It became a separate entity when it broke away from the southern supercontinent of Gondwana, which comprised of today Africa, South America, Australia, Antarctica, and the Indian subcontinent and the Arabian Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
About 240 million years ago and started to move northward. Scientists believe about 140 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Greenland-sized landmass, largely submerged in a tropical sea, where sediments collected and slowly turned into rock. Then as it collided with what is now Europe, between 100 million and 120 million years ago, it shattered into pieces, was shoved beneath that continent.
Mm-hmm.
Only a fraction of Greater Adria's rocks scraped off in the collision remained on our surface for geologists to discover. And that kind of makes it hard to really study this stuff because it's kind of dispersed across more than 30 countries, a swath from Spain to Iran. So, like the rocks themselves, data has been scattered and thus are difficult to collect. And until the past decade or so, geologists haven't had the sophisticated software needed to perform such Byzantine reconstructions.
Mm-hmm.
The Mediterranean region is simply quite a geological mess.
Mm-hmm.
He says everything is curved, broken, and stacked. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just like when you're cleaning up your... bedroom as a kid, you just threw all the shit under the bed and hope nobody looked under there. Essentially, that's what happened to this continent.
A major collision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of like the phenomenon that happens if a car hits a train.
Yeah.
Except happening over like 20 yeah. million years.
Yeah.
As they say here, it happened about... the tectonic collision happened at speeds of no more than 3 to 4 centimeters per year.
Yeah. So.
All right. Yep. So, next up, Alexa. Yeah, Alexa Alexa's getting some improvements, including its first celebrity voice. Who is that first celebrity voice going to be? Samuel L. Jackson.
Yep, and you can get him in Clean. I don't know why you'd want to. Or
yeah, seriously, why?
Yeah, it's like, show your kids what real Sam Jackson is.
Mm. Yeah.
Not your Nick Fury Sam Jackson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using this neural voice technology that they've got, you know, for some of this stuff to make it sound
better
like him.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. See, they're launching later this year for a special price of 99 cents for anyone who wants to purchase it in 2019, mm-hmm. after which it's $5.
Mm.
Also promising that more celebrities will arrive next year, too.
Yep.
Yeah, Google started this with John Legend.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I think I think their best announcement was the twerking bear.
Yeah, that's of course. That's the thing
they announced. It's an Alexa-enabled twerking bear, because we didn't have one of those in the world, and now we do.
Nope.
Sure. I do like the headlines they saw for the glasses.
Mm.
That was about Amazon's going to let Alexa sit on your face.
Oh, and there's the Monty Python song stuck in my head.
Yep.
But yeah, they announced a bunch of other stuff, like they have their own AirPods style
headphones
competitor.
$30.
Let's see. Yeah, 129, 5 hours of battery life, so noise cancellation, technology from Bose. The new Echo's $199 Echo Studio, which is bigger than the previous model, features high-quality speakers that enable 3D sound with Dolby Atmos.
Yeah.
So you got $99 Echo, comes with updated speakers in a range of new colors. New Echo Show 8 video calling device offers a bigger 8-inch screen and more powerful audio. A version of the inexpensive Echo Dot, which starts at $59, has an LED display with a clock underneath the device's fabric casing. The most visually arresting device presented today was the Echo Glow, a bedside companion. The device targeted for kids lets them tap the top of the device, causing to cycle through a range of brilliant bright colors. Pairs with Alexa so that user can set timers, play music, and turn on campfire mode.
Hmm.
So that's a new age nightlight, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This new device called the Echo Flex gives users a cheaper way to extend Alexa into every room of the house, $25. Essentially a tiny speaker equipped with a USB port for phone charging, a switch to mute Alexa and motion sensors, and a nightlight.
Yeah. My problem is that it's when it like fits into an outlet, and outlets are typically down low, so if you're going to want to mute it, you're going to have to do some gymnastics.
Yeah.
Still, I like that the option's there.
Yeah, they got a home Wi-Fi router, Eero.
Yeah, they bought
Eero. It's getting an update. Yeah. Let's see, $99 for single device, $249 for three-pack.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
Let's see. Yeah, they got Alexa equipped. Let's see. A smart oven, $249. It's equipped with convection cooking and an air fryer.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
There's also... Users also scan packaged food items from the Alexa app, which will trigger the oven to start cooking.
Mm.
Amazon said users receive a free Echo Dot with every purchase of smart oven. Mm. Sure, I guess.
Mm. Still waiting.
It's a new device.
Still waiting for the microwave to show up here in Canada, but it's not yet available.
Yeah, that's basically what this seems to be.
Yeah.
There's a new thing called Fetch, which is attached to a dog's collar, allowing the owner to track it. Let's see. It's two new Day One products, which are still under development at Amazon. The Echo Frames prescription glasses feature two built-in microphones for Alexa commands, but no cameras or display. Unlike stuff like what Microsoft did and Magic Leap were working on, as well as Google's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also the Echo Loop, which is meant to provide what Limp called snackable notifications.
Okay.
It lets you talk to Alexa from a ring on your finger. Okay, sure.
Yeah, okay, so you want to have, if you're somebody who wants to have Amazon Echo everywhere.
Yeah, just look like that asshole. Just, I got 50 microphones on me. Letting Amazon know what every part of my body is doing right now.
Yeah. So what they did do is, they did announce that one of the things that they're going to be doing is, you can basically tell them to, like, delete what you just said, or delete everything you said in the last 24 hours. And you can also ask Alexa, if she like does something that you have no idea why, you can just go, why did you do that? And then yeah, they'll tell you what triggered it.
Yeah. No. I can't let it in. We have one device that has Alexa, and we never set it up. And it will be a cold day in hell if I ever do. I have to draw the line there. Well, you guys know how I did blur the line with Amiibos. Mm-hmm. I wasn't gonna do it, but with this is fucking security. No, it's bad enough the phones listen. No more.
Yeah, I think even worse is Facebook has their portal.
Yeah, which is
it's their webcam essentially.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Which is like you think about it's like, oh yeah, it's there's no way you can ever communicate with people that live across the country or the world with video capabilities. Just that never existed.
You have to use Facebook Portal for that.
Yeah,
it's like just what you really need is to give Facebook a 4K camera in your house.
No, I've been using Facebook on iOS since I'm using iOS at the moment, and it is like their marketplace is riddled with ads for other stores, like constantly. Hmm. You can't see the used stuff around you for all these. It's horrible. I mean, really.
Yeah. I deleted the app ages ago when they were having that whole thing like, oh, they're mining all your information off your phone, even if you denied them that access.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah, but so many people use Facebook Messenger, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's hard to, I think if you have Facebook Messenger on your phone, you freaking might as well have Facebook on your phone. I can't see that the permissions are going to be any different, really.
Yeah, I don't use Facebook at all outside of talking to you people.
Yeah.
We should switch to Discord.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah.
Or at least try it out sometime.
Yeah. Or Signal, or Signal. We could all just put Signal on our phone and communicate that way, but I don't know. Dan Reb's not going to go for that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, next.
So, move on. We're moving on to Amazon. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who recently got 6 Emmys for her show Fleabag on Amazon its second season, just signed a big overall deal with them.
Wow. Yep. What's she going to be doing?
Let's see. What does it say here? She signed a substantial overall deal with the streamer. She'll create and produce new television content for Amazon Studios to premiere exclusively on Amazon Prime Video. And I think it's about 5 years, $20 million a year.
Okay.
So pretty good deal for her. She says she's insanely excited to be continuing my relationship with Amazon. Working with the team on Fleabag was a creative partnership dreams are made of. It really feels like home. I can't wait to get going.
Yeah.
Amazon. Some
more stuff to work on. Stuff, you know?
They are. They're filming, they were tonight. They're filming extremely close to me right now. Unbelievably close. Although right now there's a huge thunderstorm. So all the people that I saw walking from the parking lot to the filming area in costume, which is really cool to see. I don't know that they're still doing that because we're having a hell of a lightning show right now.
What are they?
They're filming Utopia. Were out here in late spring, early summer, and then they said that they were going to be coming back for more scenes. And I don't know what it's all about, but they've set up like this huge tent city in a local resort in one of their parking lots. It's kind of the abandoned golf course's parking lot, so it wasn't being used anyway. And they brought in like a helicopter as a prop and a bunch of, I don't know if they were like legit army trucks and army people, but like they were walking around with big fucking guns and shit. I don't know. I mean, it looked pretty realistic.
Hmm.
But yeah, they're doing most of the filming at night and it's lit up like Vegas. It's bananas. Like we have to shut our bedroom door to keep the light from coming in through the side windows so we can sleep. Yeah, it's not extremely close. I mean, it's like, it's like a 5-minute walk away.
Yeah. A couple blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should turn it around on them, set up that Amazon Echo over where they're at.
No, it's actually being guarded pretty well. So they've got security. They have tons of emergency vehicles on site too, ambulances, whatnot. It's really interesting to see what all is involved in a production of this scale. So, yeah.
But anyway, next up, we now know that there will be a sixth season for BoJack Horseman, and it is going to be the last one. They're going to be releasing the last season in two parts. Part one is going to be in October 25th, and part two will be January 31st. And I am, I'm actually glad because, you know, the one thing that can kill a good show is not knowing when to end. And I am kind of afraid that BoJack isn't actually going to survive the actual season because, so we'll just see how it happens. But they're already like doing another show. The creators are already doing another show called Undone.
For Amazon.
Yeah. So, you know, they're still getting good work. And we'll see how this works out. Next up, Kevin Feige from Marvel is working on a new Star Wars movie.
That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, he basically says like he is a huge diehard Star Wars fan, and kind of just the work he's done with Marvel, like, yeah, we'll try this out.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably going to be a very different kind of Star Wars movie.
Yeah, so he's going to be producing this.
Yeah, at least.
Okay.
Hopefully Disney doesn't fuck it up. I mean, Star Wars lately has been...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's be honest, after the original trilogy, when has it never been... Yeah.
Well, you know, I really did like Rogue One.
Rogue One was good.
Yeah.
It was passable.
It was. I mean, it's watchable. Yeah. It's watchable.
Yeah.
It has some fun spots, but yeah.
Anyway. And next up, you no longer have to worry about Spider-Man because he's back in the MCU. Disney and Sony reached a deal this week for another Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, so there's a Spider-Man movie as well as he's going to be in one of the MCU movies.
Hmm.
So that's the current deal. It's like, yeah, we said this before, like they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
They're going to want to make billions of dollars. And the best way they can do that is by making another one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy money for them. They said it will be out July 16, 2021. So that puts it right in the middle of Phase 4.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, because it's basically two companies that realize how much money this thing's going to make. Disney's like, we want most of that money. Sony's like, no, because we have the rights to this thing.
Mm.
We can just take it away if you're being assholes. And they're working on their own stuff as well. They're, like I said, they're working on, what is it? Well, it's not mentioned here, but yeah, there is, like another movie they're talking about, working on for Spider-Man. It's not Spider-Man, but in the Spider-Man universe.
Yeah. And to be fair, the last couple of Spider-Man movies that have come out are actually really good. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have.
And yeah, kind of just doing their own stuff. As well, which Disney has to be like reluctantly like, oh yeah, they're doing their own thing, sure.
Yeah.
like Venom did pretty well box office wise. They got Morbius coming along, coming out next year. But yeah.
Good stuff.
So don't get wrapped up in the angry rantings of two giant corporations.
No.
They don't care about you.
No.
Isn't it sad when mom and dad fight?
Yeah, when they send out like the Russo brothers, like saying like Sony fucked up. It's like those are company men. Don't forget that just because you like the Endgame, doesn't mean that they're not speaking as corporate men.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Always good to keep in mind.
Yeah, it was so transparent when you ever saw like Feige go out there, the Russo brothers, like they're not doing this because they give a damn about your feelings. Mm-hmm. It's because they're trying to get you to get angry at the other party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And force them into coming to a deal.
Mm. It's true.
Yep.
But, and finally, last story for the night. We now have news that the new Jurassic World movie will bring back Sam Neill, Jeff Goldblum, and Laura Dern.
Laura Dern.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I see the space now.
Yeah, so...
I can't be the only person who's done that before, right?
Oh, heck no.
Fonts are fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're using Arial, which is like the best fucking font ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they always do that weird shit. Mm. But yeah, this is going to be fun to see, like, what... Because we know that with the Battle of Big Rock sort of short film that they put out, it's like we're dealing with a U.S. that has dinosaurs roaming around it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now these three are sort of... Yeah. Like life has gone on in a very weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they want to bring back these three to figure out how to solve it or deal with it. I don't know. I don't think they can necessarily... They're not fucking superheroes, so they can't really start just killing dinosaurs left and right.
Yeah. Or the scene where they're in, it's just like the three of them on an island and somebody shows up, hey, we need your help. Mm-hmm. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
You did this to yourself.
Yeah.
That was basically Ian Malcolm in the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Where he was in like the congressional hearing about the shit that went on. And he's like, yeah, this is all fucked up. You people shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's like all his part was in there.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I saw the Battle at Big Rock. That was a good little short film. I kind of like the direction they're going.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. I got hope for the next Jurassic World movie. And that's weird.
You just get back to the part where the dinosaurs are fucking shit up that stupid people let happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was not the second movie.
Like, second
Go ahead.
I was going to say. I was going to say, I'm suddenly feeling this strange feeling. Is it hope?
Yeah. We don't have much of that lately, but anyways.
But yeah, like the second movie was just about these assholes capturing these dinosaurs to auction off to rich people.
Yeah.
And it's like they got their fucking comeuppance. Some of them did.
That went well.
Yep.
But yeah, the way they get back on them is just releasing the dinosaurs. Like you can't actually sell these things.
Yeah.
And everybody else is paying for it. Saw some shit like at the end of 2 where the dinosaur, where the one dinosaur is running amok in LA, I think it was, or San Diego. It's like, oh, it's just one dinosaur. Now there's dozens.
It's just one.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
We have come to the end of it, yes.
Mm-hmm. That was a hell of a week.
Oh my god, right.
And it's probably going to be a hell of a week next week too.
Yeah.
In fact, I have a feeling this shit's just getting started.
Yep.
So, with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, or something you just want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, with all that being said, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Felipe Donolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logie, and Teresa Sammons. Good night. We're just getting started, folks. Oh, boy.